I'd made it almost to the state line, so close to a secret shelter where Rob couldn't have found me.
She sighed.
Anyway, I was this close,
she held up her fingers, measuring,
when I looked in my rearview mirror and saw the flashing lights. He'd found me.
Max frowned. He called the police on you? Caroline started to frown back, and then understood the source of his confusion.
No, Max. Rob was the police. He was a cop.
He closed his eyes, his expression now haggard. God.
Yeah.
So there wasn't anyone to help you? She took one of his big hands between hers and focused on tracing the lines defining his palm.
No, not really. He pulled me over that night and pulled Tom from the back seat. He said I could go, but I had to leave my son behind.
Her throat swelled, remembering.
I'll never forget the look on my baby's face. He was so terrified. So I went back.
She looked up to find his gaze fixed on her, and she met his eyes, willing him to understand.
He had my baby.
Max brushed a stray lock of hair from her cheek with a hand that trembled. You did what you had to do to protect your child. You couldn't have left him alone. She shook her head.
No, I couldn't.
She cleared her throat.
Rob pushed me down the stairs that night.
He swallowed, his throat visibly working. And you broke your back.
No, not that time. That would have been the second time, after I finally got up the nerve to take out a restraining order. This was the first time I tumbled down the stairs.
She didn't miss the way his face tightened, but he didn't say a word.
This was the time I...
Caroline felt her lips tremble, her eyes fill. She dreaded the memory of what came next. It was a memory she'd always managed to stuff back down, but tonight it simply wouldn't.
I lost my baby that night.
She blinked and felt the warmth of her own tears on her face. Max brushed them away.
I felt so guilty,
she whispered, the emotions all coming back.
I hadn't wanted that baby, and...
It wasn't your fault, he interrupted harshly. You didn't make yourself lose that child. She leaned her forehead against his chest, shuddering when his hand brushed up her spine to cup the back of her neck. The tears came then, hot and fast.
I never told anyone that part, Max. Not even Dana. I was so ashamed.
She gritted her teeth, trying to stop the sobs that shook her body, stole her breath.
I had a little girl. She lived a few hours, and she had all her fingers and toes and blonde hair and...
He pulled her to him, cradling her in his lap, rocking her against his chest. Damn it, Caroline, he said, his voice breaking as well. That was not your fault. It was a bastard you married. He was responsible, not you. He buried his face in her hair. Not you. Please don't cry. Don't cry like this anymore, please. Caroline drew a deep breath and held it in, battling for control, failing miserably.
I got to hold her once before she died. She was so incredibly tiny.
She gulped back the sob and turned her face into the strength of his chest. Her arms wound around his neck, and he held her, rocking her, one hand threaded up through the hair at her nape, holding her head against him, the other rubbing the length of her back up and down, his touch desperate. Finally, he twisted his fingers in her hair and gently tugged her head back, covering her lips with his, the desperation of his touch flowing into the possession of his mouth. He kissed her until she pulled away to catch her breath, then took her mouth again. He kissed her until the torrent of her grief gave way to something new, something tender. It consumed her, filling her up until there was no room for the grief or the memories, until there was only Max holding her, running his hands over her body. until the tenderness bloomed into desire, and she swung one leg over his lap to straddle him, fully participating in the kiss that continued to gather strength. Until Max pulled back, each breath he drew expanded his chest to the point of straining the buttons that ran up the front of his shirt. Caroline paused, her hands splayed against his chest, looking down into his face, her body poised over his. Every nerve sizzled, every muscle vibrated. She was ready. God, she was ready. His eyes bored into hers, his face harsh in the flickering firelight. "Say it, Caroline." There was only one response.
"I love you,"
she whispered.
"I do."
"Then let me make love to you." His hands ran down her back, cupping her bottom, stroking, claiming her, inflaming her. "Let me make you fly." Caroline slid from his lap and stood before him, amazed her legs actually held her upright. Bending over, she grabbed his cane from the carpet and held it out to him with one hand, her other extended open-palmed. He grasped her open hand, then pulled himself to his feet with his cane. And as they made their way up the stairs to his bed, stopping to kiss, to caress, to whisper words of longing, Caroline focused on Max alone, steadfastly ignoring the small voice that reminded her the rest of the story was far from complete. Raleigh, North Carolina, Saturday, March 17th, 9 p.m. "No, Helen." Stephen took another dead fish from the cooler and cleanly sliced off its head, making Helen grimace. "I am not interested in whatever her name is." He threw the fish head into the bucket at his feet. Normally sitting in a faded lawn chair in his driveway cleaning the day's catch marked the quiet end of a good day of fishing. Normally, Helen never came near him when he was cleaning the fish, so he had anticipated a momentary respite from the constant matchmaking she'd subjected him to all afternoon. He'd been ready to throw her in the river along with old Granddad, who, like Winters, remained stubbornly at large.
"Her name is Amanda, and she's a very nice woman. Look, I know your date with Susanna didn't go that well."
"My date with Susanna was a complete and total disaster." Understatement of the day. If Helen insisted on matchmaking, why couldn't she turn up at least a few women who'd been standing in the brain line on Creation Day?
"Still, that doesn't mean you should give up on women entirely. Lordy, Stephen, do you have to do that while I'm talking to you?"
"Do you have to talk to me while I'm doing this?" he snapped impatiently, and her shoulders sagged. His heart melted, even though he knew Helen was a better con than most of the criminals he'd busted over the years. "I'm sorry, Helen. I don't mean to be rude here, but you continue trying to set me up with every available female in Raleigh." Helen's nose crinkled as Stephen gutted the hapless fish. Not as big as old Granddad, but with the others he and the boys had caught, they'd have a nice fried fish dinner after church tomorrow.
"Not every available female,"
Helen insisted primly, her face going slightly green in the yellow glow of the spotlight over his garage door.
"Just the ones who'd be good mothers."
"God." Stephen fought for patience. "I'm happy the way things are." He scowled up at her, frustrated when his frown appeared to have no impact. He'd intimidated big, huge men into confessing with that look. Helen just looked determined as ever. "Damn it, anyway." "But I will become decidedly unhappy if you continue to push women into my path against my will." Helen crossed her arms over her chest, one gray brow elevated in challenge.
"And then what will you do, Mr. I Think I Know Everything? Remember, I..."
Yeah, I know the drill." Stephen blew out a weary breath. Now she was fighting dirty. "You changed my diapers, even the really dirty ones, and you tanned my hide with a switch when I was bad, even though you cried yourself. Helen, please." He stood and gazed down at her, going for his most desperate, pleading look. "I just want to be left alone." Helen pursed her lips, clearly still unaffected.
"Wait too much longer and you will be."
He hated that smug tone. "That's fine with me." Clenching his jaw, he sat down on his lawn chair and pulled another fish from the cooler.
Stephen, for heaven's sake, I don't know why you have to make this so hard.
And if he had his way, she never would, he thought, separating the fish from its head with one clean swipe of his knife. Nobody would.
Fine,
Helen said, wincing when the fish head sailed into the bucket.
Be miserable alone, Stephen. See if I care.
She turned for the front door of the house.
See if anybody cares. You're becoming a bitter man, Stephen Thatcher,
she added, her voice trembling. And leaving Stephen to the debatable comfort of dead fish, she went into the house. He was on his final fish when his cell phone jangled in his pocket. Damn, he muttered, reaching for an old towel and wiping most of the fish guts off his hands. No matter. His cell phone had been covered in worse things than fish guts over the years. Thatcher, he barked.
Agent Thatcher, this is Detective Rodriguez. Did I catch you at a bad time?
No. Stephen looked over his shoulder to see Helen sadly staring at him from the picture window in the dining room, and again his heart tugged, even though he knew he was still being manipulated.
Well, yes, actually. My hands were covered in fish guts.
Rodriguez coughed.
I can think of several dozen ways I'd prefer to spend a Saturday night.
Did you call me to criticize how I spend my recreational time, or did you have something specific to say, Rodriguez? Stephen asked, only mildly annoyed. Rodriguez chuckled.
I wanted to bring you up to speed on results of our search of Livermore's computer.
Good stuff? Stephen asked, resolutely turning from the picture window. Let Helen stand there all night if she wanted to. He still wasn't going out with her, Amanda, or any other woman.
Yeah, too bad we can't use everything we found. The warrant was too damn specific. But we did find enough to nail Mr. Livermore for conspiring with Winters. He had indeed broken into the personnel files at Asheville General. We found a file he'd downloaded with the name of every nurse that worked there 9 years ago.
Stephen straightened in his lawn chair. Excellent.
We also found he'd tapped into the Illinois DMV and searched dozens of names.
All female?
Yes. But we found something else you need to know. Livermore sent a fax of a shorter list of names and addresses of the women to a Mailboxes USA store in Chicago. The names matched the pictures we found this morning. I called the store and found that a man about the size of Winters signed for the fax yesterday afternoon. He had an ID, Mike Flanders. Everything had been in order, so the store owner didn't think anything about it.
Stephen closed his eyes and saw the photo of the Mike Flanders persona flash behind his eyelids. Simple, but effective. Winters had the names and addresses, but not the pictures. That was something, at least. Still, a detail nagged at his gut.
Why a shorter list of names? He asked. The women on the short list were all between 5'2 and 5'5, no pun intended.
Mary Grace Winters was 5'4.
Son of a bitch, Stephen muttered. He's hunting.
With a better map than we thought, Rodriguez said grimly. Chapter 19. Chicago, Sunday, March 18th, 8 a.m.
Good morning.
Caroline opened her eyes at the sound of Max's voice and sniffed. Food. It smelled wonderful. She blinked in the bright morning light and focused on him standing next to the bed. Buck naked, positioning a breakfast tray on the nightstand. From her vantage point, she got a view of broad shoulders and a tight rear end that made her mouth water more than the pancakes and syrup he'd piled high on two plates. It had been quite a night. He was quite a man. She pushed herself to sit up against the pillows, automatically pulling up the sheet to cover herself. She wasn't as comfortable with her nudity in broad daylight as he obviously was. Her fingers toyed with her hair, surreptitiously pulling it down to cover the side of her neck.
You made me breakfast?
Max poured her a cup of coffee. Don't get your hopes up too high. It was a mix my ma found on sale. She must have had some coupons or something. I just added water. He sat down on the edge of the bed and he bent over the tray, pouring his own coffee. Caroline reached down to the floor next to the bed and retrieved his shirt. "Don't put that on," Max asked quietly. His hands had stilled on the coffee pot he held as he looked over at her. "I want to see you. In the daylight." Caroline bit her lip. "In the daylight." Up until this moment, they'd made love at night, in the darkness, by firelight. Even yesterday morning, he'd kept the shades pulled low, keeping his bedroom in semi-darkness. But this morning, all the shades were pulled high, letting in every beam of morning sunlight. All her scars would be visible in the daylight.
"But he'd see them sooner or later,"
she told herself. She dropped the shirt back to the floor.
"All right, Max."
Nevertheless, she clamped her arms over the sheet, holding it in place as she took the plate he offered.
"Smells good. I guess I was hungrier than I thought."
He raised a wry brow. "We worked up quite an appetite last night." Caroline felt her cheeks burn, but couldn't stop the smile that curved her lips.
"I guess we did."
Oh, boy, they did. Her body still tingled from the exertion. Muscles ached that she hadn't known existed. Max certainly didn't let his handicap stop him from full mobility, in bed or out. Mercy. He was a most generous man, many times over. Max chuckled and sipped his coffee. "You have the most adorable blush." He leaned over and covered her lips with his, almost knocking the plate from her lap. He glanced down at the plate. "Have you had enough to eat yet?" She'd yet to take a bite.
"Depends. What are you suggesting we do instead?"
He murmured, running his mouth up the curve of her jaw to her ear, bringing the most delicious shiver all the way through her body. "Obviously you weren't paying enough attention last night. Some after-school instruction is in order." She smiled against his cleanly shaven cheek.
"More places?"
The plate was moved from her lap and pushed onto the nightstand, where luckily it stayed.
"You're going to have sticky sheets if you're not careful,"
she admonished. "I'll wash them," he muttered, as he pulled her back down on the bed until she looked up into his face. His eyes had the look she'd come to know so well over the last 48 hours. He wanted her. Again. Her body grew warm just from the way his eyes took her in, as if she were precious. He made her feel precious. And suddenly all the guilt that had been building assaulted her in one big wave. She owed him more honesty than she'd given him so far. She'd let this go way too far without telling him about that damned marriage certificate in the Buncombe County, North Carolina courthouse. She owed him the rest of the story, and she owed it to him now.
"Max,"
she began to say, but he interrupted her with a kiss so possessive it stole her breath. She reached for his shoulders to push him back, to talk to him, but her hands, treacherous hands that they were, continued across the breadth of his back. The heels of her hands dug into powerful sinew and muscle, drawing an appreciative groan from deep within his chest. His mouth left hers only to nibble a trail down the side of her neck. She tensed. In the morning light, he'd see her scars plainly. But there was no shocked cry of disgust. He never even skipped a beat as his mouth heated her skin anew. He hadn't noticed. Or if he had, he wasn't so repulsed after all. She relaxed, sinking into the sensations he created simply by the touch of his lips. Her hands wandered, exploring him with a newfound freedom, sliding across his back, his hips, his buttocks, that abruptly tightened in response to her feathery caresses. He lifted himself so that he was looking down at her, sexual tension making the lines of his face harsh. Without saying a word, he brushed the hair from her face, so gently that her eyes filled from the beauty of the gesture, so at odds with the ferocity of his expression. She was precious, Max thought, this woman he held in his arms. She was his. "I love you, Caroline," he told her, his voice husky.
I think I've been waiting for you my whole life. She blinked, sending two fat tears down the sides of her face, and he wiped them away with his thumbs.
I'm glad I didn't know then how beautiful this would be.
Her reply was a shaky whisper.
I don't think I could have survived without it as long as I did.
His heart squeezed. He pressed a kiss to her forehead. I'm so damn glad you did. He took her lips then, driving away her sadness the way he'd found most effective, the way he intended to do for the rest of their lives. He kissed her until her arms came up to wind around his neck, until she kissed him back, wholeheartedly, withholding nothing. It was what he'd been waiting for. She was arching against him now, driving him crazy with the way her body sought his, even through the sheet she clutched like a shield. It was time. The way he'd dreamed it all those years of nights alone in his bed. He lifted his head to say the words, but her lips chased for more, so he kissed her with a downward pressure that pushed her head back into the pillows. Marry me, Caroline, he said against her lips. And he waited for her to say yes, as she had every time he'd played this scene in his mind. Instead, her body went still, stiff, and his heart stopped. He lifted his head to find her face ashen, her blue eyes wide, and horrified. Caroline? She opened her mouth, formed the word no, but no sound emerged to accompany the rejection. She shook her head, hard, decisively. His jaw tightened. He'd anticipated in his more calculated plays of this scene that she'd need time to think about it, that it was too soon. He hadn't expected an unqualified no. He hadn't expected horror, not from Caroline. He pushed himself away from her, his spine now as stiff as hers. He sat up, widening the distance between them. Care to tell me why? She nodded. Out loud, he added. She licked her lips, sat up and pulled that damn sheet higher, but still produced nothing resembling a verbal explanation. Sometime this century, Caroline? Her eyes flashed, and she pressed her lips together. He'd made her angry. Good, because so was he. Let me make it easier for you, he said, throwing his legs off the side of the bed to grab a pair of gym shorts from the closest drawer. He stumbled as he made the short walk to the chair in the corner. Anger surged, and he savagely controlled it as he sat down. He shoved his legs into the shorts, then pulled them up and stood in the same movement. I'll make it a multiple choice. He searched the room for his cane, then limped over to pick it up. Choice A. You're afraid of me. You think I'll hurt you like your ex-husband did. He walked closer, leaning on the cane, staring at her in his bed, her back pressed against his pillows. She stared back, her now narrowed eyes locked on his, bright blue as the core of a gas flame.
Go on, she said softly. I'm anxious to hear the rest of my choices.
He stopped where he stood, his anger slightly subsiding. She was no longer horrified, no longer merely angry. She was furious. He'd never seen this side of her, this cold fury, even the night she swept into his house to yank him from the mire of his own self-pity. He sat down on the edge of the bed and reached for her hand. She crossed her arms over her breasts in response.
What is multiple choice B, Dr. Hunter?
She asked in that same deceptively soft voice. One dark brow quirked up.
I truly want to know.
Max took a deep breath. He'd stepped in something. There would be no way around it now. He'd have to go through it. That you don't love me as much as you led me to believe. Her jaw clenched.
And choice C? Please don't disappoint me, Professor. There simply must be a choice C, or it's not a fair test.
Max looked away. These. He pointed to the ugly red scars on his legs. And this. He held up his cane and winced when she laughed bitterly.
The bed moved, and when he looked back, she'd pulled his shirt on and held it closed like a bathrobe.
"Those are my choices?"
she asked, picking up her clothing from the floor where he'd discarded them the night before.
"I'm a fool, I'm a liar, or I'm a hypocrite?"
She straightened and turned to him, her eyes bright, no longer with the flame of her fury, but with tears.
"I guess I should be relieved to find out what you really think about me, Max, before you do something stupid like ask me to marry you. I choose D, none of the above."
She walked around the bed to where he still sat, the tears now running down her face.
"I'd be a fool if I thought you were like Rob. You're gentle. He was abusive and angry. The only common trait I can see is that you're both prone to temper tantrums when you don't get your way immediately."
He dropped his eyes to the curve of his cane, wishing with all his might he could take back the words. But of course it was too late.
"I'd be a liar if I said I didn't love you,"
she continued, her voice breaking. He couldn't look up.
"Because I do. More than I ever thought possible. And I'll tell you one other thing, Max. Rob hurt my body, but he never, ever broke my heart."
He heard her draw a deep breath.
"Because I never loved him."
He stood to follow her as she moved to the door and stopped when she abruptly turned, her eyes now wild and hurt.
"Don't come after me. Don't touch me. I don't want you to touch me."
She wheeled around, the tail of his shirt flying in the wake of the breeze she created. Max held up his hands, palms out in surrender. "Caroline, wait, please." She paused, her back still to him.
"Why?"
"I'm sorry." Her back stiffened.
"You're sorry,"
she repeated carefully.
"That's very nice. You're sorry you accused me of being so shallow, so hypocritical, that I'd judge you based on your scars? Didn't you listen to anything I told you last night? Damn you, Max, think about someone besides yourself for a damn minute."
She turned her back to him and let his shirt drop to the floor. His gut reeled as if he'd taken a physical blow, and bile rose in his throat, gagging him. He sank down to sit on the edge of the bed, barely conscious he'd done so. Her back. "Caroline." It was as if her name was wrenched from his chest, along with his heart and every last nerve in his body. He sat, unable to move. "My God."
"You want to compare scars, Max?"
she asked, her voice quiet now.
"I think I win."
Chicago, Sunday, March 18th, 9 a.m. The phone ringing jolted Winters out of a nice, easy sleep. He rolled over and stretched, watching Evie feel for the phone by her bed, her eyes still shut. There was something to be said for younger women. They may not rise with the chickens, but they certainly were inventive. Evie managed to get the receiver to her ear.
"Hello?"
She paused, frowned.
"She's not here. Wait, Caroline, what's wrong?"
She paused again.
"Because you're crying, that's why. What's wrong?"
Winters's ears picked up at the sound of that name. It would seem little Mary Grace wasn't having a very good day.
"She worked last night,"
Evie said.
"She won't be home for at least another hour."
She turned over and shot him a distracted smile.
"Try paging her. Caroline, wait."
She rolled over and sat up, holding the phone with both hands.
"Don't hang up. Look, about what happened on Friday. I'm sorry I said what I did. I want you to be happy with Max."
Evie winced and pulled the phone away from her ear, frowning as she stared at it before hanging it up. "What was that all about?" Winters asked, keeping his voice at just the right level of interest. Evie gave the phone one last puzzled look, then turned to him with a shrug.
"That was Caroline, you know, my friend I had the fight with. Oh, of course, you know her. You were fixing her pipes."
She rolled her eyes and laughed at herself.
"That was stupid of me. Anyway, she needed a ride back to her place.
She scrunched up one corner of her mouth.
She's had a fight with Max, a pretty bad one, I'd guess. She told me I was welcome to him.
She looked down at him with a grin.
Too little too late, huh?
Winters smiled back, his mind already processing. He needed to get to Caroline's first. He needed to be waiting for her. If she'd had a fight, the tall guy with a cane would be absent. It was the opportunity he'd been waiting for. Listen, hon, I gotta go. Your roommate'll be home soon, and he rolled out of bed, only to have her playfully pull him back.
We got an hour, Mike. We can do a lot with 60 whole minutes. Besides, if Dana goes to pick up Caroline, she won't be home until past 11. Come on, it's Sunday. Don't tell me you work on Sunday.
Winters pulled her hands from his waist none too gently. I really need to go, Evie. I'll call you later. He rose from the bed and began pulling on his clothes. She followed him, pulling his jacket from a chair and slipping into it. She was so tall his jacket barely covered her naked ass. He looked over, mildly admiring. She had a nice naked ass. Give me my jacket, Evie. I need to go. She smiled saucily.
You'll have to take it off me.
Winters rolled his eyes. This had gone beyond amusing. Give me my jacket, now! He reached for the collar and pulled it from her back. She struggled, still playing, then stopped when something small fell from his pocket. Winters tried to grab it, but she'd seen it and had already bent over to pick it up.
What's this?
She asked, turning over the 3x5 fake gold picture frame. Winters watched her, gauging her reaction, hoping for her sake Evie Wilson was really, really stupid. She'd grown on him, and she was one of the best lays he'd had in months. She looked up at him, her brows furrowed. Damn, she wasn't gonna be stupid.
This is a picture of Tom Stewart. You stole this from Caroline's apartment.
A look of revulsion crossed her face.
Oh, my God. You like boys. Oh, my God.
She looked down at the picture again and frowned at the small wallet-sized photo he himself had stuck in the corner.
This doesn't make sense. This is Tom a long time ago.
She tugged the small picture from the corner of the frame and read the date on the back, and her face went pale. She took a step back.
Oh, my God. You're...
Her eyes flipped up to his, wide and terrified now. Damn. She had to be really not stupid. He'd always thought God wasted brains on women. She moved for the bedroom door, still wearing nothing but his jacket. He needed to get it off her. Blood was a bitch of a stain to get out. He gripped her wrist until she fell to her knees. Interesting possibilities. But he was in a hurry. No more time for fun. Even if the girl had a mouth like a Hoover, which she did. She looked up at him, crying now.
Don't. Please, don't.
He pulled the jacket from her back before pulling her to her feet. Now, Evie, what do you think I'm gonna do? He pushed her to the bed and reached inside his jacket pocket for the ball of twine he'd purchased on the way to pick her up the night before. Edelman had been unplanned. He didn't intend to be so unprepared when he finally got Mary Grace in his hands. And good preparation always paid off. He glanced at his watch. He didn't have a lot of time for this. Best to just get it over with and finish the job. He smiled down at Evie, who was staring at him with glassy-eyed terror. He couldn't wait to see that same look in Mary Grace's blue eyes. Evie, didn't your parents teach you not to get into cars with strange men? Chicago, Sunday, March 18th, 10 a.m.
What the hell is going on here?
Dana hissed as she stalked up the steps to Max's front porch.
Why are you sitting here in the cold? And what happened?
Caroline kept her eyes on the big oak tree in Max's yard, remembering the first time she'd seen it. The stupid fantasies of little black-haired children begging to be pushed in the tire swing.
Just take me home. I'll do nothing of the kind. I talked to this man yesterday, Caroline. He cares about you.
Caroline surged to her feet.
He thinks I'm a liar and shallow.
She walked down the front steps and pulled on the door to Dana's old junk pile. Of course, being a prudent native Chicagoan, Dana had locked her doors. Caroline tugged on the door again and glared at Dana, who stubbornly still stood on Max's front porch. Max opened the door and looked at her, his eyes anguished. As well they should be, Caroline thought. She wouldn't come in, he told Dana, finally breaking the stare to look to Dana for help. Dana sighed.
Caroline is being stubborn. Tell me it isn't so. Come in the house, Carol. We need to put whatever happened to bed.
Caroline laughed bitterly.
So to speak. You can put it anywhere you want, Dana. Just leave me out of it.
I fucked up, Max told Dana, his voice quiet.
He did,
Caroline confirmed. Dana looked from Max to Caroline, then sighed again.
Carol, I've been up all night. I met three separate families at the bus station. I'm tired, and I'm coming up on that time of the month. If you plan to screw with me, you picked one hell of a time.
She looked at Max.
Let's go in and hear it.
Caroline's jaw dropped as Dana's treason struck home.
What? You can't do that.
Dana shot her a level glare.
Why not? This isn't always about you, Caroline. You tell someone you love them, you involve them, you include them. Now grow up and get your ass in this house.
Caroline stared at her for a long minute, then rolled her eyes.
Whatever.
This was the Dana that kicked her out of Hanover House and pushed her to get her GED. It was the Dana that loved her like a sister. Unwillingly, she made her feet move. Max held the door open for her, and she walked through it, looking at his face. His drawn, haggard face. The face that had looked down at her with such tenderness as he'd made love to her all night. The face to which she still hadn't told the whole truth. Dana patted the kitchen table.
Everybody sit. Do you have any coffee? I'll make some,
Caroline said.
Sit, Dana. You look like hell. Thanks,
Dana returned wryly.
I love you, too. Have a seat, Max, and lay your fucked up cards on the table.
Max sat and related the events of the morning, leaving nothing out. Caroline watched him as he spoke. She'd been right. He was nothing like Rob Winters. Max Hunter was a good man. A good man who unfortunately wore a chip on his shoulder the size of the Rock of Gibraltar when it came to his handicap. By the time he'd finished, the coffee was brewed. She poured three cups and put them on the table. Dana took hers and gulped, blinking.
God, this is strong.
Caroline sat in the chair furthest from Max, knowing her turn in the witness box was quickly approaching.
I should have held my temper,
she thought.
I shouldn't have shown him my back that way. It wasn't done to share a truth with the man I said I loved. It was done as revenge, pure and simple. You look like you needed it that strong,
she shrugged.
I do anyway.
Dana looked at her, disappointment in her brown eyes. Caroline looked away.
You let all that go on, and you still didn't tell him?
Dana asked wearily. Caroline shrugged again.
I was mad. You were stalling.
Dana fired back. 100% correct. Tell me what? Max asked, his voice now wary.
Tell him.
Dana put her cup down with a bang, moving her hand just in time to avoid the hot coffee that sloshed over the edges. Caroline moved to get up and get a towel, and Dana caught her by the edge of her sweater, holding her in her chair.
Sit your ass in that chair and tell him the goddamn truth. I will not tell you again.
Tell me what? Max demanded. Caroline, what's going on here? Caroline covered her face with her hands.
I don't know where to start, Max.
Her voice wobbled and she swallowed.
I'm very scared to tell you this.
Why? His voice was gentle. Why are you afraid of me still? She lowered her hands and looked straight into his eyes. He deserved that much.
I'm not afraid of you. I told you that, and I meant it. I'm afraid of what you'll say when I tell you why I said no this morning when you asked me to marry you.
Max reached across the table and took her hand.
Tell me. Please.
Caroline closed her eyes.
I'm not really a brunette.
Why was that the first thing that came to her mind? She would have kicked herself had she been able.
I figured that out for myself, Max returned dryly. I may walk with a cane and suffer from terminal self-pity, but I'm not blind, even in the dark.
Dana cleared her throat.
I didn't need to hear that. Go on, Carol. Get to the good part before I fall asleep in this very uncomfortable chair.
Max glanced over at Dana before bringing his eyes back to Caroline's. I wondered why you dyed your hair, if what was on your head was the same pretty color as... He checked himself when Dana choked on her coffee.
I figured you'd tell me when you got ready.
He looked down at the table.
I thought you trusted me that much.
Caroline winced.
Direct hit.
She filled her lungs with air and let the breath out on a tremendous sigh.
Max, I'm not the person you think I am. Caroline, that's not true.
Dana inserted.
You're exactly the person he thinks you are.
She glanced over at Dana with a half smile.
You're splitting hairs, Dana.
Caroline turned back to Max, whose eyes were narrowed and wary.
I told you I tried to run away from Rob once and he pushed me down the stairs.
Max nodded. The night you lost your baby. Dana's surprised, indrawn breath had them both turning to face her, then back to one another.
I was listening, Caroline, he said quietly, even if you thought I wasn't.
She remembered her words, regretted them.
I'm sorry, Max. I shouldn't have said that. I had a tantrum of my own, I guess. The next time he pushed me down the stairs was after I took out a restraining order. He put me in the hospital for 3 months. My back was broken, and at first the doctors weren't sure if I'd ever walk again.
She closed her eyes.
Rob told me if I told anyone, he'd finish the job.
She opened her eyes to find his face shocked and pale.
I believed him. After my mother had called him, after I'd tried to run away before. Her car ran off the road a few months later. He didn't want her telling anyone. So when he told me not to tell anyone, I didn't tell anyone. But I listened. One of the nurses at the hospital kept telling me to just leave, to get help, like it was that easy. But one day she gave me information I could really use. The name of Hanover House, a place that would help me change my name, get all the papers I'd need to live a new life.
Caroline covered his hands with hers and watched his gray eyes flicker as his shrewd mind processed.
For 3 months I laid in that hospital bed and listened and planned my escape. I woke up every morning and saw my statue, my St. Rita statue, and knew I wasn't an impossible case. That one day I'd get away and take Robbie with me.
Robbie?
Max asked, his voice hoarse. He lifted his eyes to Dana, and Caroline felt her heart sink. He couldn't look at her. Maybe it was better that way. Dana nodded.
Robbie's the little boy I met at the Greyhound station that night, clutching his mother's hand. Tom is the boy that walked out of Hanover House. He's the boy you know today.
She looked at Caroline.
Finish, honey. Just get it over with.
Caroline dragged her eyes from Max's haggard face to Dana's concerned one.
I couldn't walk then, when I first got home. I couldn't run away then. I knew he'd find me, knew the walker would make me stick out like a sore thumb.
She dropped her eyes to the tabletop.
He wouldn't let me go back to rehab. I knew he wouldn't. So I listened so carefully to the doctors when I was still in the hospital. I took notes. And when I got home, I did all the things they said to do. You did your own rehab?
Dana commented quietly.
You never told me this part either. I couldn't relive it. I never wanted to remember it again.
But she closed her eyes, made herself remember.
I worked out with his weights when he wasn't home. Got stronger every day. But I never let him see it. I walked with the walker, held my hurt arm against my body like I had every day in the hospital, dropped bowls and pretended to stumble. But every day I got stronger. Towards the end, I walked around the house with a backpack on my back filled with rocks whenever he wasn't home.
Caroline felt her lips twist, the memories still humiliating.
He wasn't home a lot. He stayed with a neighbor next door. She was prettier than me. More of a woman than me. I was a gimp.
She swallowed hard.
He didn't touch me as often once he had her. It was the one good thing to come out of all of it. But he did touch me. Enough.
She felt the familiar terror wash over her and pushed it back.
Don't worry, Max. I had myself tested once I'd been here a year. Somehow I managed to get away uninfected.
She shot a look at Dana.
The nurse at the clinic told me I should thank God. It was a year before I could find any thankfulness in me. I think God understood,
Dana murmured.
I think he still does.
Caroline shrugged.
Perhaps. Anyway, when I finally could carry the backpack filled with rocks for 8 hours at a time, I knew I was strong enough. I sewed all the money I'd saved inside my shirt and picked Robbie up from school one day at the end of May. It had been 2 years since I woke up in the hospital.
2 years? Max ground out. Caroline shrugged again.
I told you once that rehab for poor people sucks. It takes a lot longer when managed by an amateur.
She sighed.
I had my route mapped out. I knew Rob wouldn't be home till morning, that he'd spend the night at Holly's house. That gave me enough time to drive to Tennessee and lose my car. Where did you lose it?
Dana asked. A satisfied smile bent Caroline's lips.
At the bottom of a deep lake where nobody would ever find it. St. Rita made a handy accelerator wait.
She paused, one particular memory sweet.
I remember watching the car launch and sink. It had been just as I'd dreamed it every time I thought about my escape. And so was the look of shock on Robbie's face when I picked up the backpack and started to walk.
He didn't know? Max asked.
No. I didn't want to burden him with yet another secret his father would suspect. We hiked into Gatlinburg, Tennessee. It's all tourists, so nobody even noticed us. 3 bus transfers later, we were in Chicago. With a stopover in St. Louis,
Dana said. Why? Max asked, his head now in his hands.
To borrow a birth certificate. It's so easy, it's scary. You go to a cemetery, find the name of a child that died as an infant with the right birth date, go to the country seat and request a copy of the birth certificate. I wandered around the cemetery for hours searching for the right name, the right birth date, before I settled on Caroline.
What was your name before? His voice was muffled.
Mary Grace. Mary Grace Winters.
She paused.
Do you understand now, Max?
He nodded, his head still down. Yes, I do. He ran away, disappeared, and never divorced the son of a bitch that terrorized you every day of your life. He lifted his head, his gray eyes now fierce and alive. And you feel like you have to honor the legal tie that binds you to a monster you should have shot with his own gun while he slept.
He's quick, Caro.
Dana commented.
He came to exactly the same opinion I did. Dana, please.
Caroline squeezed his hands.
I can't marry you, Max.
She felt her eyes sting and clenched her teeth. She would not cry. She would not. She'd cried too much for one day already.
I want to marry you more than I want to breathe, but I can't.
Caroline. Max started, but she cut him off.
Don't try to convince me otherwise. I love you, and I'm prepared to do just about anything except that. It's wrong.
Keeping your vows to a monster is wrong, Caroline, Max insisted. Denying us a chance to be happy is wrong. Don't tell me you haven't dreamed about spending the rest of your life with me. He took her hands and put one on each side of his face. Don't tell me you haven't dreamed of waking up with me. Don't tell me you haven't dreamed of the babies we'd make together. He dropped her hands and stood, walking around the table, holding the table edge as he made his way to her. When he reached her, he grabbed her shoulders and pulled her to her feet, compelling her to meet his eyes, steely gray with determination. A family, Caroline. A real family. Denying us a chance to have a normal family is wrong. Caroline closed her eyes, unable to meet his piercing stare, unwilling to see the hurt she was about to put in his eyes.
I've dreamed of all of those things,
she said, her voice unsteady.
You know I have. Max, please try to understand. Don't ask me to do something I believe is wrong.
Max released her shoulders and stepped away. So you'll choose your integrity over me?
No, I never said that.
Then what are you saying? He gritted from behind clenched teeth.
She's saying she'll live with you in sin, but won't marry in a church before God and everybody,
Dana said flatly. Caroline glared at her, eyes narrowed.
Shut up, Dana.
Max shook his head. No, Caroline. Is she right? Is that what you're saying? Caroline looked from Max to Dana and back to Max again.
That's what I'm saying.
Max's face paled. Then I guess we've finished talking. A new voice intruded. David's voice. Max, wait. As a group, they looked to the archway connecting the kitchen to the foyer. Caroline rolled her eyes.
Oh, for God's sake, David. Do you make lurking in the foyer listen to me spill my guts a habit?
David shrugged. Max called me. He said he needed my help. I came. How long have you been standing there? Max asked woodenly. Long enough. Max, don't be so quick to decide this, please. Max shrugged and lowered himself into one of the kitchen chairs. You're the one telling me I should be more spontaneous. Max! Max raised his hand, his eyes closed. Enough, David. I've heard enough. Caroline truly believes her convictions. So do I. I want a wife, a family. I want it to be legal in front of God and everybody. I have my integrity, too. You want to be normal, David murmured. Max, please. There's nothing more to be said. Max opened his eyes, and Caroline felt her heart die. She'd hurt him, more than she'd thought possible. I won't live your way, and you say you won't live mine. We're at an impasse. Caroline swallowed back the sob that lodged in her throat.
So this is it?
Max nodded, his jaw set grimly. Your rules, Caroline.
I'm sorry, Max,
she whispered. She leaned forward to kiss him goodbye, and he jerked his face to the side, out of her reach. Just go, Caroline. Chapter 20. Chicago, Sunday, March 18th, 11:30 a.m. Dana brought her car to a squealing stop, breaking the silence that had reigned since they'd pulled out of Max's driveway.
I swear to God, you are the biggest idiot God ever had the misfortune to place on this planet,
she snapped, fastening her gaze straight ahead out her windshield. Caroline yanked at the door handle and launched herself from the car, then turned and leaned in. Her wet face stung in the cold wind, but she was long past trying to stem her tears.
And that would be your professional opinion?
She asked sarcastically, her voice altered by her very stuffed-up nose. Dana cocked her jaw to one side.
No, that's my opinion as your best friend. I have no idea why you are so hung up on that stupid bigamy thing anyway.
Caroline narrowed her swollen eyes.
Shut up, Dana. Shut up yourself, Caroline, and listen to yourself. You don't really believe in this whole bigamy thing, you know that? So you break the law by marrying Max Hunter. It wouldn't be the first law you've broken, and it's unlikely to be the last. Every time you sign your name, you're a fraud. Every time you call your son Tom, you're propagating fraud. Technically illegal. But you do it because the fear of being caught by your husband was way more powerful than the fear of going to jail.
She drew a breath and shook her head.
Shouldn't love for Max and the desire to make him happy be stronger than any petty regard for the law that conveniently happens to pop up now? You're out of line, Dana. No, I'm not. Because this whole bigamy thing is too convenient. It's a way to keep yourself from getting hurt. It's the way to leave yourself an escape hatch. Don't shake your head and tell me no, Caroline. I'm right and you know it. If you don't tie a legal knot with Max, and if things don't work out, you can run away, just like you ran from Rob and Mary Grace. Just like you've run from any serious relationship since the day I met you.
Caroline felt her body tremble as Dana's words sliced deep, as her betrayal sliced even deeper. Dana had been her rock, her support, the only one to believe in her. And now, she was numb. Her mind unable, unwilling to process another thought. Her eyes hurt, her face stung, her heart. She couldn't even feel it anymore.
Go away, Dana,
she said wearily.
Just shut up and go away.
Dana smacked the steering wheel.
Fine, Caroline, I'll shut up and go away. That way I won't have to sit back and watch you throw away a perfectly legitimate chance for happiness.
Dana blew out an angry, frustrated sigh.
Close the door, Caroline. Go up to your apartment and hide from your fear all alone. Be morally superior all alone. Enjoy it while it lasts. And you'd better damn well pray Max still wants you back when you come to your senses.
Stunned, Caroline.